Hey, so it is November 2nd, 2016. Aleph of the Chodesh of Cheshvan. And, alright, we are in the middle of Perek Zayin, and it's Halacha Day of Perek Zayin. So I was drawn in by an essay that appears in the Minchas Asher. The Minchas Asher Weiss, we've quoted from him a bunch in the past because he has halacha topics arranged by Parsha. So if you're looking for halacha Parsha topics through every parak, every Parsha, it's a good place to look. So we've quoted him in the past. And here on this parak, he has a essay on the issue of magic, the Chartumei Mitzrayim, the magicians of Egypt. And then Aaron and Moshe had a response that they also seemed to perform magic in front of Paro. Now, that he doesn't discuss it specifically with, well, is that problematic because Moshe and Aaron are not allowed to be doing magic, they're Jewish. But he does discuss just the general issue of magic when it comes to Jews. So I figured, A, it fits within this parak. Second of all, it's also the topic that we're covering in the Monday night shiur, and I could use a little more in the Monday night Shulchan Aruch shiur. We're up to Simon Kuf Ayin Ches, Ayin Tes, I forget now, which deals with these issues. So I figured, it's a good time just to go and review and learn some of these topics. So he starts off with a Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin, where Abaye makes the following comment, as we learned. We didn't learn Hilchos Shabbos in this room, but the Gemara track learned Hilchos Shabbos last year. We know that there are three divisions when it comes to describing actions on Shabbos. One of them is that things could be either, well, mutter, or number two is things can be prohibited, in Isser D'Oraisa. And then there's a third category, which is called Pater Aval Aser, generally understood to mean in Din D'Rabbanan, that you are pater, meaning you're exempt from the punishment, you haven't violated the biblical prohibition, but it's still prohibited to do. So generally that means it's a Din D'Rabbanan. However, in this topic, we'll see that it doesn't necessarily mean that. But the Gemara tells us in Maseches Sanhedrin, comments, Hilchos Keshafim Kehilchos Shabbos, that the laws of magic are like the laws of Shabbos. Yish mehen beskila, v'yish pater aval aser, v'yish mehen mutzil chatchila. There are some things that are liable to stoning, some things are pater aval aser, and then there are some things that are even that are mutzil chatchila. So then he gives examples. If you actually do the action of kishuf, ha'osa maisa, you do it, so then you are chayiv skila, you'll get stoned. Ha'oches, well, you'll be liable to skila. You'll be, yeah. So ha'oches esayinayim pater aval aser. That one who oches esayinayim, what does it mean to be oches esayinayim? So it sounds like, okay, literally means you're pulling with the eyes, or you're pulling the eyes. That's literally what it means. What is that referring to in the realm of magic? You are doing an illusion. A slide, some kind of sleight of hand. Sleight of hand. So it sounds like that is pater aval aser. We'll see whether it means the Rabbanan or the Oraisa, just not liable to the punishment. And then what's Mutter L'Chadchila? So could Rav Chanina v'Rav Oshia, what do they do? Kol Male Shabta Habu Aske Behilchus Yitzira. That every Erev Shabbos they would involve themselves in the laws of Yitzira, the laws of creation. Umivre Luhu Igla Tilsav Achila. They would create a calf that is one-third the age, one-third the size or age of a calf, which is apparently the best time for calves, and v'achila, and then they would eat it. It doesn't actually say they would shecht it. It just says they would eat it. We'll get into that. It's unclear. What? No. Okay, this Gemara seems to be saying that using the Sefer Yetzirah to create things, right, it sounds like quite a magic trick, but that is mutter l'harchila. That is totally permissible. So using the Sefer Yetzirah doesn't just create animals, it also should be able to create humans. Right? In theory, the golems that have been created, now unclear in modern times, but in the Gemara talks about, the same Gemara that talks about creating a calf, two daf earlier talks about creating a person. Two daf later discusses creating a person. In Sanhedrin, yeah. So daf Samach through Samach Zion or so discuss these issues. So it sounds like that's okay. Amoraim are creating people. So we'll get to, we'll discuss something about all three of these categories. By the way, the Sefer Yetzirah, if you're interested, the instructions on how to create living creatures is, we still have today, we have something called the Sefer Yetzirah, and it's available in English if you want. Not only is it available in English, it's available on HebrewBooks.org for all the world to see. You can find the Sefer, you can go to the, what?
I think Kaplan did it.
Yeah, I heard that. I didn't see that. I heard Arya Kaplan did a translation, or he...
And commentary.
Okay, so you have from Arya Kaplan. You can go to Hebrew Books. You don't have to go to Hebrew Books. You can go to the Wikipedia page of Sefer Yetzirah, and on links on the bottom is one of them to the links to the English translation of Sefer Yetzirah. Ayin Sham V'tim Sanach Asim.
How do you spell Sefer Yetzirah? You've got to go to Wikipedia. How do you spell it?
Sefer Yetzirah or leave off the last H for savings? I'm not sure.
What's that mean?
Yetzirah? Well, literally creation.
No, it's formation.
Formation, okay. Right, Formation. Yeah, formation. Okay. So anyway, so with regard, we'll talk about a little bit about Kishuv and talk a little bit about the status of creation. So with regards to the laws of Kishuv, there is an interesting dispute within the Rambam. There's a very big problem with the Rambam. I found it to be a big problem. Well, I never found anybody to address it. I found in this essay, the Menachas Asher talks about it. He mentions the issue. What's the issue? The problem is the Rambam doesn't believe in magic. The Rambam is a rationalist, and he believes all of this stuff is fake. In fact, he concludes his perek, where he talks about this, perek Yud Aleph and Hilchos Avodas Kochavim, he concludes it by saying that anybody who believes that any of this stuff is real is crazy, you know, is a fool. What? Well, I'm not sure he's talking about the Chumash itself. I mean, he believes that there are miracles, and it could be that, but anybody that believes that humans have the ability to just do these things on a whim, he thinks they're wrong. And all the stories that you'll find in Midrashim, or the stories that you'll find in the Gemara, are either allegories, or they're dreams, or they're fake, or there has to be a rational explanation for all of it. The Rambam is called out for this. He's called out some people more harshly than others. Some say, well, the Rambam just disagreed. Others say the Rambam, you know, was... kind of was on the philosophy, like kind of sided with the Greek philosophers, and the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, famously calls him out. Says that not only does the Rambam side with the philosophers, the Rambam was influenced by the philosophers, which I found to be pretty fighting words from the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon says everybody says the Rambam disagrees with him, which could be, and the Rambam was influenced by the philosophers. Regardless, you still have to understand what the Rambam was talking about. I mean, the Rambam had to have an understanding in these sugyas in Sanhedrin. The Gemara seems to talk about magic, and the Gemara itself also mentions the idea of Ocheze Sinayim. And they mention it as different levels, meaning if you actually do it, you're Chayiv, and if you do illusions of it, you are, well, it says Patraval Aser, which you don't get skila, you don't get the penalty for doing it. And the Rambam in his Yad HaChazak in Perek Yud Aleph goes through all of these different things, the diviner, Kishuf, and Ma'onein, and Ov, and Yedoni, all these different things. The Rambam goes through them and gives those distinctions, says if you do it X, and if you do Ochei Seinayim, Y. But at the end he says all this stuff is fake. He says if anybody thinks, the Rambam has a comment in the Shmona Prakim, in his introduction to... Well, it's really quoting a Medrash, where the Rambam discusses the idea that is it appropriate to wish you could sit? Is it appropriate to walk by McDonald's and say, oh, if only I could just go in there and have a cheeseburger right now. I really would like to have a cheeseburger. Or should you say, that's disgusting, that's terrible, who would ever want to go into such a store? So the Rambam says it's quite normal to say, and it's appropriate to say, I would like to go in there, but what can I do? A Kadosh Baruch Hu told me that I can't go in there. That's an appropriate response. For certain things, I don't think it's appropriate. The Rambam says it's not appropriate to say, I really would like to, ram my car into Sam's car, but what can I do? Kadosh Baruch Hu said that I can't do it, so I'm not going to do it. I mean, that's not an appropriate attitude. So it is appropriate with certain things, it's not appropriate with other things. So the Rambam distinguishes between rational mitzvahs versus irrational mitzvahs. It's probably how do you make that distinction, but what's on which side. But the Rambam says that things like murder, right? It's not appropriate for him to say, I really would like to be an axe murderer, but what can I do? The Torah said that I can't be an axe murderer, so I'm just going to be a rabbi instead. I mean, that's not an appropriate attitude to have. It is appropriate to say, I would like to do certain, what we call irrational prohibitions. Now, the Rambam lists, I found it interesting, I don't know if anybody else make a big deal about this, the Rambam lists arayos as one of those things that a person can say, I wish I could do. Yeah. So I think I mentioned this once in Shabbos Shuvah Drasha, but that's an interesting point, which takes us way off our topic today. Yes.
You could sort of look like one of them. One way, they're of ego, anger, and there's some of tivus.
Okay.
And then there's tivus in general, and tivus.
Okay.
Goyim could do with
okay.
And us, like kosher, goyim could eat unkosher
yes.
food.
Yes. Okay.
Normal, but we are extras.
All right. Many ink. Much ink has been spilled, and much trees have been felled in understanding that Shmona Prakim and that Medrash that the Rambam is quoting. Yeah. Okay. So, anyways, back to our issue with regards to magic. So there are two So what's my question? My question is how could the Rambam on one hand at the end? Oh, so the Rambam. Sorry, the Rambam says in Perek Aleph Halacha Tes Zayin, I believe, the very last halacha in that Perek, the Rambam comments, right? And don't say, "Oh, I wish I could do this magic stuff. I wish I could be a sorcerer, but what can I do?" A Kaddish Baruch Hu said, "I'm not allowed to," because the stuff doesn't really exist, and anybody who really believes in it is totally fooling themselves. And there's no reason to wish you could do it, because there's nothing to wish you could do. It doesn't work. So. My problem is, well, wait a second. Didn't you just, Rav Rambam, with all due respect, didn't you just spend the entire perek distinguishing between doing the action and doing achiza senayim? I mean, doing the real thing versus doing sleight of hand. So, if you say that the whole thing is fake, how could you ever be chayiv for the real thing? How can you ever be chayav for the real thing? That's my question. I never actually saw anybody take this head on. I see he does. He asks this question. He says, by the way, luck in the Achronim who discussed this. And how could the Rambam say this that doesn't exist? If on one hand, but it does talk about it being exist. And then he says at the end, HaReisha lo yikra neis vefala, ayidei maisa kishuf. And what does he say? Mitzarachian.
What?
Sarachian. Not sure. These further thoughts.
No answer.
Okay. Well, no, it doesn't mean there's no answer. It means that it needs more work to figure out the answer. Well, it means he didn't feel in his context of the Chumashir that he gives on a weekly basis that that's what he wants to talk about. I don't know.
Is there much difference in the Yad Kazaka than a guy to perplex me? One was written.
Not in this issue. This issue, he's consistent. This issue is consistent.
Okay, good.
Okay, so as far as I know, I'm not a big Guide to the Perplexed expert. I'm not a big Mishnah Torah expert, but from what I looked up, I think that they're both, he's consistent through both. So anyway, so the Rambam, oh my gosh, we're out of time. We're going to skip that. And the Rambam has a, I'll just say it outside, the Rambam seems to have a stira, where in one place he talks about an onen. An onen is a fortune teller. Somebody who looks at the stars or looks at the sand or looks at the various formations and says this is a good thing, this is a bad thing. And there the Rambam says, and if you do that, and if you're ochiz esayinayim, meaning if you're not really doing it but you say you're doing it, so you are chayiv makos, that's what the Rambam says. It sounds like you're chayiv the real deal for being ochiz esayinayim, just for doing illusions. Now, the Rambam didn't make it up. The Gemara itself seems to say that. The Gemara itself seems to paskin that way. That's the sheet of the Chachamim, where he says, what is an onein? An onein is somebody who is being ocheze sainayim, somebody who is doing illusions. So the Rambam says that you're chayav makos there. However, later on, when it comes to kishuf, when it comes to sorcery, the Rambam says, if you do sorcery, you're chayav misa, you're chayav skila. And if you only do achiza sainayim, you're chayav makos mardus. What is makos mardus? Makos mardus are derabbanan imposed makos, derabbanan imposed lashes, which generally implies that you've only violated the derabbanan. Right? So which one is this? Achiza seinayim considered a true a violation to a riser, or considered a violation of level of derabbanan? So there are various answers. The Beis Yosef gives an answer, and the Taz gives an answer. The Beis Yosef gives two, but let's mention one, that he says that, no, that both of them are intertwined with one another. If you do one, you're doing the other. It's just that when it comes to an onein, the chiv of an onein is makos. So therefore we're going to impose makos on you for the astrology, or for the fortune teller thing. The lav for kishuf, for magic, is death. So if you're not going to do the real death action, you get knocked down to the din derabanan, not to din derabanan, to the lesser din of achiza seinayim, of illusions. So says the Kesef Mishnah. Okay, we have a rule in Shas that something called a lav shenitan lazharis misa spasin, a lav that leads to a death penalty. That if there is a lav, a prohibition that generally carries a death penalty, we can't impose upon you makos for the lesser prohibition. That's just the rule. A rule. There are various rules. We learn makos here. Right. There's various rules when it comes to imposing makos. That's one of the rules, that you can't a makos will not be imposed upon somebody if it's not explicit in the Torah as being a chi of makos, or as being a lav that is subject to the rules of makos. But if it's a kind of a knockdown from something else, you would find. So if you violate something that is achiza seinayim, that fits both these categories, that of onin as well as kishuf, so says the Rambam, you would be chayiv makos times two. But only one of them is the real mekoy, and one of them would be makos mardus, but you're still chayiv both. Others say, no, you really only chayiv one, and they fit within the same thing. That seems to be what the Taz is saying. Just to get to the punchline here with regards to man, so it sounds like achiza seinayim should be a din, at least a din derabanan. So which means that nowadays magic shows should be usher, and there are those that pass in that way. There are religious institutions that pass in that. You can't have magic shows. It's just on the list of prohibited activities. So the. Well, then you're participating. Yeah, so technically it's the guy doing it, but still a shul wouldn't hire him. Yeah. There'd be a problem with hiring someone to give a magic show in shul. So there's two ways around it. Number one, he points out, is that we disagree with the Rambam. That if you disagree with the Rambam and hold that there is such a real thing, so it could be that the Chiza Seinayim isn't even an Issa Derabanan. Meaning
what does the Beis Yosef say?
Beis Yosef is going within the Shitas HaRambam.
Yeah, really?
Beis Yosef is trying to understand the Rambam, yeah.
Yeah.
So that would be, but it could be that maybe that achiza seinayim isn't even a din derabanan. Maybe it's not even usher according to everybody besides the Rambam. Now, it still doesn't leave you very comfortable saying, okay, well, we'll pasken like everyone except for the Rambam. Like, it doesn't sound so good. But there is the general accepted answer today. By the way, there is a Chachmas Adam. He's writing in, I guess, the late 1700s or so, the Chai Adam, Chachmas Adam. He actually said it was usher. And he writes in the Chachmas Adam, and you should tell people this, and it should be, people violate this. I don't know who was doing all the magic in that era, in Vilna in 1790 or something, but he was very outspoken in the Nishmas Adam that people should know that this is usher, and we shouldn't do it anymore, and it's problematic. And people quote that as saying that therefore we shouldn't have these shows. Now he quotes, however, which I think the general heter is being, he quotes from his Rebbe, from the Divrei Yatziv. The Divrei Yatziv is the Kloisenberger Rebbe. He quotes the Minchas Asher, Asher Weiss considers himself a Kloisenberger Chassid. And he quotes from Divrei Yatziv, who is long, long Shivus. I didn't look this up inside, but he gives the reason why it's Mutter, and that is, who is the most famous magician in the world today? Well, Houdini's dead. So, who is the most famous alive magician today? Yeah. Who would you say? Just off the top of your head.
Penn and Teller,
okay. Or, I mean, generally people say, I'm not sure about Penn and Teller. Generally people say David Copperfield. That's their biggest reaction. What does David Copperfield call himself?
Illusionist.
Right? He calls himself an illusionist. What he's trying to do is not to show you magic and make you believe he is a sorcerer. He wants you to know that he's tricking you, right? That he wants you to be thinking, how did he do that? And for you not to have the ability to figure out how he did that. Right? That's his chap. So, in fact, there's a show I saw over the summer. There's a show, Can You Trick Penn and Teller? I think there's a show on that. Penn and Teller, that if somebody gets up, does tricks. Penn and Teller in the middle, and Penn and Teller are supposed to figure. The chap is, can you figure out a way that Penn and Teller can't even figure out how you're doing the trick? That's the. That's the idea of the show. But what's the idea? The idea behind all this is that everybody knows it's not sorcery. It's just really, really neat. It's really interesting how a person can go in and do that. So because it's obvious that it's not really magic. So says the Kloisenberger that therefore you don't have to worry about that actually being kishuf. It's not even achiza seinayim. Achiza seinayim is sleight of hand to make you think you're a sorcerer.
Yeah. Right.
Comes the Divrei Yatzev and says, but if you don't even want them to think you're a sorcerer, so therefore it would be Mutter Legamri. Fine.
I would think, I'm not totally off the wall, but I always...
You?
Yeah. Sorry. I mean, to me, the Ram, I thought it was a different group. The Rambam was dealing, when he got to Cairo, and I think 70-80% of the Jews were Karaites.
Okay.
And then a lot of them were Polak, they were educated, they weren't different.
Okay.
And to me, the philosophers didn't believe in magic, you know.
Okay.
So I think he didn't want Judaism people to think that's
what I don't want to get into
I don't know anybody ever write that.
The Rambam writes what he writes. Well, I think you take the Rambam at face value that was his shita. And whatever the situation was at the time was the situation at the time. But the Rambam writes in the Mishnah Torah, he knew what he was doing. He wasn't writing for the people of Cairo. He was writing for everybody for all time. That's what he writes in the introduction. Okay. So, anyways, I want to discuss. He has a couple of interesting points here with regards to the golems. First of all, who's the most famous maker of a golem? The Maharal of Prague. So just so we know, Rav, that's been pretty debunked, the idea that the Maharal actually made a golem. My understanding is that, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but if you're interested, Dr. Schneer Lyman, who seems to know everything about everything, has an article where he points out that the first appearance of this idea that the Maharal had a golem didn't appear until like 50 years after he died in children's comic books, and it developed out from that. But the Maharal himself was still making a golem. I haven't read all the volumes of the Maharal, but Dr. Lyman says the Maharal makes no comment on making a golem, and it seems that it was developed something later on. So, you know, I'm sorry to disappoint you, Sam. That's the way it is. However, in the course of his discussion, he does quote, apparently the Chacham Tzvi says that his Zikno, I don't know if that means his grandfather or his ancestor, who is the Rav of Chelm, he says he did make a golem.
Who said he did make a golem?
The Chacham Tzvi says that his grandfather made a golem.
And his grandfather was from Chelm?
Was from Chelm, but not the I don't know if it's the same Chelm that we talk about Chelm nowadays. Not that Chelm. There's an altar of Chelm. There's a place called Chelm, which is known as a great Musar bastion in the late 1800s, early 1900s. I don't know if it's that Chelm, but this would be 200 years before that. So I don't know which what it's referring to, but he says here, Chinkas of Hagon Bal Chacham Tzvi, Shehuad Al Zikno Hagon, Rabbeinu Eliyahu, Abbasin of Chelm, Veshuv Kasav Bino Besifro, his son Rav Yaakov Emden writes, Oso Hagom Shabar Zikno Rabbi Eliyahu Gadol Ma'od, Shesichin Sabrius Vikish Rabbi Eliyahu Levato, that he was starting to make people dangerous. He had to get rid of him, so he got rid of he erased the name from the forehead. But that's not too far back. That's a couple hundred years back. All right, let's just start from the beginning. The Gemara.
Totally anti-Sabbatean.
Yes. Yes.
So in a way,
yes.
If you're anti-Sabbatean, you might think there is magic.
Yep.
That would be that makes them so dangerous.
Okay. So comes the Gemara. The Gemara quotes these two stories. One is that two of the Amoraim that Rava, one of the stories we quoted before, that the two people on Erev Shabbos made the golem together. Rav Hanina, Rav Oshia made a golem of a calf, a one-third aged calf on Erev Shabbos, and then it sounds like they ate it on Shabbos. And number two is the story about Rava, that Rava wanted, it's Ibai Tzadiki Baru Alma, Shinamar Kiyam Hasayim Hayum Avdil, that Tzadikim created the world, or righteous created the world. Rava Bara Gavra Shadri L'Kamim D'Rabbi Zeh, Rava created a person, that's what it said, Bara Gavra created a person, sent it to Rabbi Zeira. So hava ka mishtoi behed velo hava ka mahadrele. So he spoke to it. Rabbi Zeira spoke to this golem and didn't answer back. Amarle man chavri at hadrele afrecha. He says, so who are you? You're obviously not a person. So he turned him back to dust. That's what the Gemara says. So it seems like somebody created it. And the assumption also is that Rabba created it for a purpose. I mean, Rabba sent him to Rabbi Zeira to do something, to bring a message, to send an email, I don't know, to do something with Rabbi Zeira. And then Rabbi Zeira, whatever the purpose was, so he erased him at the end and got rid of him.
This is the Gemara? What are you reading?
This is the Gemara itself, yeah. I mean, I'm reading it out of Menachas Asher. It's the Gemara. Samech Hayamid Beis, yeah. Yeah. So first question is, why is that not considered Kishuf? That sounds pretty sorceress to me. All right, so why is that okay? So he explains that That's not sorcery. That is just reality. The reality is, if you follow the instructions in the Sefer Yetzirah in the way that it's supposed to be, this is just what's going to happen. I mean, that's not using the demons of the world. That's just the reality of the way things are going to work. Now, he adds in here a little bit better from the Chassam Sofer, I think, that the Chassam Sofer explains that how does this stuff work? Now, if you explain that the Gemara tells us also in Sanhedrin, that what does Kishuf mean? Kishufim shemachishin pamalia shel mala. That Kishuf, why is it called Kishuf? What is the meaning of the word Kishuf? So Kishuf means... Sorry, I want to translate it as that they contradict the upper legion. They contradict the upper legion. Now, what is the upper legion? Now, the upper legion is not necessarily a Kodesh Baruch Hu. The upper legion are Malachim and all those other things that we talk about on Vachayos and the Srafim and the Chaya, all these different heavenly beings. That's what it's talking about, the Pamali Shamala. And they apparently are in charge of things. They're in charge, as the quotes here from the Zohar, "Ein lacha kol isav she'ein malach makei v'omer lo gadol." There's no blade of grass that a malach doesn't strike and say to grow. Meaning what? Who's in charge of the grass growing? So it sounds like not exactly a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu has placed angels in charge. So the way to do kishuf, assuming kishuf can happen, is to fool around with the demons.
Right.
Is to start, or the demons, or the angels, or the good angels, the bad angels, right? Is to start working with them. The Sefer Yetzirah, creating a golem, is not using the angels, says the Chassam Sofer. You're using a Kodesh Baruch Hu himself. If you're using a Kodesh Baruch Hu himself, it's no longer a violation of Kishuf. That is the suggestion that he brings. And he adds in here that there is a mission in the beginning of Pirkei Avos that Dishtamish Perek Aleph Mishnah Yud Gimel, Dishtamish B'taga Chalaf, that one who uses the crowns will die. What does it mean, uses the crowns will die? What's that referring to? So it sounds like you're doing this. It sounds like you're using the crowns of letters in order to... That's one of the suggestions that are given by the Bar Tanura there. It's the third one. That if you're using these things, so it sounds like you're causing a problem. But he says, that he quotes the Shach. The Shach says, if you're using the Sefer Yetzirah, it's okay. Why? Because those are just using the Shemus HaKadoshim. Those are using the names. I mean, you're not fooling around with anything. You're just using the names of Hashem. And there's power in them to do these things. And therefore, you're not in violation of this did. Now he adds in at the end, we don't find anybody today that's able to do this. We're not able to do it with Tara and Kedusha, but therefore he doesn't recommend it. But if you're able to, so therefore it's no longer considered to be messing around with Tepal Shamala. That's just using the creations of a Kodesh Baruch
Hu. The Shema Mefarish, that people were able to do magic using the Shema Mefarish. Have you heard that?
Yeah. So maybe. It's not magic. That's what it sounds like.
Shema Farish is
Right. Is it? I'm not sure. That's not my area of expertise.
But you've heard the term Shema Farish.
Yes. But using the name, is that the same as writing the name? I don't know how that works. He quotes from... he quotes an interesting idea here from the... We're going to get up to it in the next parak. And that is with the lice, that the Chartumei Mitzrayim, it says once the blood went and then the frogs went, so they weren't able to make lice. So why weren't they able to make lice?
Smaller than
a barley grain. Is that what it is? It's smaller than a...
It's a quote in English. I don't know what Hebrew.
So it's quoted here in the Gemara. you're right. It's barley. Pachos mikisaora. That's smaller than a barley grain. Now, that's what Rashi quotes. Rashi says they weren't able to do kin. Actually, it isn't the Pasuk. The Pasuk says the Chartumei Mitzrayim tried to do this, and they weren't able to do it. So why weren't they able to do it? So Rashi says it was smaller than a barley grain. So the Gemara, that's the first thing that the Gemara says. Rabbi Elazar says that thing. So Rav Papa, that it was smaller than a barley grain. So the Gemara continues, Rav Papa Amar Helukim. What do you mean? Afilu kigamlin mamilu matzi bari. That they can't even create a camel. So rather, hai mikaniflei, v'hai lo mikaniflei. This one they can conjure, the other one they can't conjure. What does that mean? So the way that Rashi explains it in this Gemara is that you can call a camel to come over. If it's bigger than a barley grain, you can get it to come to you. So you're not actually creating things, you're just getting it over here. But if it's smaller than that, they're not going to be able to come. Lice isn't going to be able to come from someplace else and get to you. It's too small. That's the way the Gemara. It's not actually they couldn't create anything smaller than a barley grain. And he explains they're not able to actually create at all. That's the real difference between the first two makas and the third maka. Dam was water turning to blood, or frogs were coming out of the river. The kinim, I'm not sure. I forgot. I meant to take a look what exactly the verses are by the frogs. How he actually made the frogs. But the kinim, he's trying to create yesh miayin. He's trying to create from nothing. So that no one you're not able to do. That kishuf is not able to do. Kishuf is only able to change things. It's not able to create things. So if you're creating something, meaning the sefer yetzira, you're creating a golem. So therefore, you're creating it. So therefore, it's no longer kishuf. Rather, it's using the Kadosh Baruch Hu himself. He quotes an interesting idea here from the Shla. Very interesting idea from the Shla, taking us back to Bereishis. We know that when Yosef came back to complain to his father about his brothers, so there were three things that he complained about. There were three things that he told his father they were doing. Anybody remember what they were?
Killing an animal.
They were Eiver Min Achai is one of them. Most prominently was Eiver Min Achai. What else? Anybody remember? One is they were doing Arayos. They were doing immoral activity. And number three, the sons of Leah were making fun of the Bnei Shvachos.
Right, right.
The sons of Leah were bothering or afflicting the God Asher Dan and Naphtali. So he explains here that this is all going back to the issue of Sefer. He quotes from the Shla the following idea: take it or leave it. That who created the Sefer Yetzirah? So he says from Avram, although I thought it was from Adam. I think they have a record that it was from Adam Arishon.
Avram.
They don't know.
Oh, okay. Adam or Avram. Okay, he starts the trail from Avraham. Avram gave it to Yitzchak. Yitzchak gave it to Yaakov. And who did Yaakov give it to? So Yaakov didn't give it to everybody. Yaakov gave it to the best of his sons, the ones that he was the most miyuchasim, the best lineage, meaning he gave it to the Bnei Leah, and not the other children. So, then he
explained.
Well, it would have been Yosef. Maybe he didn't give it to Yosef yet, or Yosef might not have been aware that he gave it to the other sons of Leah. So Yosef sees him doing a couple interesting things. He sees him doing Eiver Min Achai. How did they do Eiver Min Achai? How is that mutter? So we gave the explanation before that it was still flopping around. Right? That's the classic explanation. But he says, no, maybe they just created an animal. And it looked to Yosef like they were taking a piece off an animal and eating it. But if it was a Sefer Yetzirah animal, if it was a man-created animal, so probably the issues of Shechita and the issues of Eiver Min Achai, they don't apply to it. So therefore they're doing that. And number two, what about the Arayos? So he says the Arayos were, same thing, if you could create a man, you could probably also create a woman. So they created a woman, and that's what they were doing the Arayos with. Whether that's a good idea or not a good idea, I'm not going there. And then the third thing he says is, and what does it mean that the brothers were bothering the other ones? So he said probably the Bnei Shvachos, they said, oh, that's pretty neat, we want in on that as well. To which the Bnei Leah said, sorry, you know, we're not allowed to tell you how to do this. So that's what caused the rift between the two brothers. That's what the Shla suggests. Again, take it or leave it. Yeah. There is a further discussion about the issue of can you count a golem for a million? What status does a golem have? So that's where this issue of the Chacham Tzvi and of Yaakov Emden come up, and they say yeah, that it could count as a woman, count as a minion. So there are many others that suggested that no, they can't count for a minion. Number one, who says that? And there's really two reasons why it would say they're not counted for a minion. Number one is who says they're actually people, and number two, who says they're actually Jews? Right. Who says that they're actually Jews? So those are the two suggestions that I put forth. He quotes from the Chazon Ish that the Chazon Ish says it straight out that they perhaps are considered people, but they're not going to be considered Jews, and that gives you that machlokas. It actually brings to mind several questions which he kind of hints to. You know, what about if you would murder one? Would you be liable for murder? So that seems to be what Rav Zeira did, right? Rabba presented the golem to. Who was it? Reb Zera, right?
Turned it into dust.
And he turned it into dust, right? The Rabbi Zera turned it into dust. How was he allowed to do that? So answer probably doesn't qualify as being human. There is, and I thought, I had heard this, that the Chacham Tzvi actually brought this, but apparently now he quotes the name of the Birkei Yosef. The Birkei Yosef actually brings an interesting proof that to say that that it wouldn't count for minyan. What is that? Because there's a story in the Gemara in Maseches Brachos that Rabbi Eliezer, he went into shul, and lo and behold, there weren't 10 people there. There were only him plus, there were him, 8 others, and then he had his Eved. He had his Eved with him. So what did he do? So it says he freed his slave in order to make the minyan. Right? He freed his slave in order to make the minyan. So the problem is that the pasuk says, li'olam behem tavodu, you have to require them to continually work for you. So you are actually violating a mitzvah's aseh in order to make a minyan. So why is that okay? That's the question that everyone discusses.
Understand that. What do you mean? Is a slave?
What? A slave doesn't qualify as a minyan. So in order to make a minyan...
I'm not sure
if it's Eved Ivri and Eved Kanani, if he's referring to. But an Eved Kanani becomes Jewish when they are freed. I'm not sure. But it says that he freed his... And Leol Mehem Tavod, I believe, is talking about Eved Kanani, not an Eved Ivri. So I think it was his Eved Kanani, but I'm not 100% sure. But he said he freed his slave in order to... Which seems to be a violation of a mitzvah's assay of the Torah. I mean, the Torah says you should have them continually work for you. So he violated that in order to make a minyan. So why is that okay? So the general assumption is that you're allowed to violate an Isser Asi for a mitzvah derabin. And not only that, making a minyan is probably only a din derabanan. It's probably only a rabbinic law. So you could violate an Isser Asi in order for a mitzvah derabanan berabin. That's the suggestion that that most Rishonim give. So the Birkei Yosef says, that's interesting. Presumably Rebbe Eliezer knew how to make golems. Why would he just make a golem? Why would he violate the Isser Asay of freeing his slave if he could just make a golem? What do you see? Obviously, a golem can't count for a minyan, right? But it would really help when we have a shiva minyan during the, you know, when mincha is early and you have shiva minyan, it would really be helpful if he could count them. But unfortunately, it seems that the general approach of poskim is to not count the golems for the minyan. Anyways, there is a pretty decent, extensive literature on this issue, but we'll discuss more another time.
Abraham and Rabbi Akiva.